Well, happy Sabbath, everyone. Welcome to those listening in. Good to get an update on some of you and look forward to seeing you back. The title of today's message is Attitude of Gratitude. We're going to consider this mindset. We're going to consider how it is necessary to become Christ-like, and we can consider several ways that we can exhibit this characteristic. And I think we'll also come to the conclusion that this mindset can have a meaningful impact on our lives. So one way that we can exhibit this gratitude is that we can be thankful for God's plan. We can be thankful for knowledge of God's plan. If we just think for a minute about the events that are going on in the world, and if we pay attention to the news and look at not just local or regional news, but events going on around the world, there are several items that we could be concerned about. We have economic issues. There was a 1,000-point sell-off this week on the 1,000 points on the Dow Jones Industrial Average this week. Economically, we have social issues. And a lot of these social issues don't get a lot of attention, but if you dig in a little bit, you can know that human trafficking affects a far too large percentage of the human population here on Earth, and the exploitation in many different ways that come as a result of that, including just the actual trafficking and moving them from one area to another and the methods employed to do that. There are boatloads of immigrants being just left adrift in the Mediterranean Sea so that wherever they do land, Italy has a significant problem with this, and France and some of those, they're having to process these immigrants and do something with boatloads of hundreds of immigrants at a time coming in. It's a big social issue there. And you can imagine what life must have been like wherever they left in order for that to seem so much better. We have extremist groups worldwide, but Africa and in the Middle East, they're disrupting the region. In the Middle East, nuclear capabilities are being sought so that greater power battles can be fought. Drug cartels are growing in power. Mexico and Central America are keeping up with demand for drugs, and as a result, economically are growing very powerful. They have the weapons, they have the power, in some cases they're just taking over the whole government. Environmental issues. There's a radiation leak in Japan that threatens the entire Pacific Ocean, really. Environmentalists aren't conclusive on what they think that the impact will be, but it's bad, and it's not stopped, and it looks like it's not going to be stopped in the near future. But it's kept very quiet. We all know of the San Andreas Fault, right? We've heard of that one before, but how many are aware of the Cascadia Fault? Few. Cascadia Fault is under extreme pressure and has the potential of a 9.0 earthquake, they think, at a minimum, but it can potentially wipe out much of the Pacific Northwest. And it's several hundred miles off the coast, but if you are familiar with the freeway topography along the West Coast, there is speculation that with the earthquake and with the resulting tsunami, that everything west of the 5 would be toast, as it was written. So that would be significant. It would affect millions of people. The deaths, they think it would be the most deadly earthquake that had ever occurred on Earth. Should it occur, and it just seems like it's a matter of time. They hope they're wrong and that it's hundreds or thousands of years from now, but it could be literally any time. Prescription drugs are a big issue in the United States. The list goes on and on and on of social issues. We're the United States. We're 5% of the world's population. We tend to think about our own issues, but then again, over half of the Earth's population lives on less than $1 a day. When you think about some of the conditions that they live in, They are not great conditions. Not necessarily meaning that they're not happy, but when we think about these things, it can feel like a pretty heavy burden. And yet when we think about the fact that we understand that God has a plan, that's something we can be extremely grateful for, because we know that this is going to change. We know that many of these issues are consequences of choices that are made that are contrary to God's law. And they're made contrary. And why are they made contrary? Because there's an adversary to God's law and his plan, right? Satan is the adversary. Satan means adversary. Is Satan good at what he does? He's very good at what he does. We're listing just a few of these consequences. He's incredibly good at what he does. He is the adversary, and God, for some period of time, is letting him win on this earth. So we see those consequences. We see relational issues amongst ourselves. We see the breakdown of the family. This is a target of Satan's, because he knows the implications of the breakdown of the family, and we see them now. And that only exacerbates the lack of leadership, and we see the consequences of a lack of leadership, the lack of trust in our leaders, lack of motivation, pure motivation on their part. We also have political issues coming up. Here in the United States, we have a presidential candidacy that's going to dominate the news, or much of the news, for the next year. And we know that trust in leadership is very low right now. And we have to speculate on what we'll get as a president and what the impact will be on the United States. But this can be unsettling. But what can we be thankful for? Back to knowledge that God has a plan and that we have opportunity to be a part of that plan. David thankfully recorded many of his thoughts because he was human. He may have lived in different times, but he was very human and he felt very real human emotions. And thankfully he wrote these things down. We can read them and get a feel for how we might express some of these feelings as well. So let's turn over to Psalm 119. Verse 165. 119, verse 165. Great peace have those who love your law, and nothing causes them to stumble. Why do we have peace from knowing God's law and paying attention to it? Well, we have peace because we know that there's a plan and that this isn't the way it's going to be forever. And that there is a solution to all of these problems. Because many times as you start having a conversation about them being the problems that exist in the world, you can get worked up. You can be trying to figure it out and trying to solve it. Well, if only this could happen, and if only that could happen. And we have this bias towards action and trying to come up with a solution ourselves. But our own machinations can't solve these world's problems. And that's a question many times, right? Have you solved the world's problems yet? No, but we're getting started. We're not there yet. And you can't ever finish. We could never finish. None of us. But God can, and that gives us peace. Lord, he says, I hope for your salvations, and I do your commandments. My soul, his whole motivation keeps God's law, because he knows that it's so much better, and I love them exceedingly. I keep your precepts and your testimonies, for all my ways are before you. This is David acknowledging that he stood before God, but he also had this peace that came from keeping God's law. God gives us the holy days to outline his plan. That's something we can be thankful for. That we have this annual reminder. Not only do we know God's plan, but we have this annual reminder of that plan. Let's just think about some of the days that are coming up here in the very near future. What do we have first? We have trumpets. What's trumpets? That's the day when Christ will return to establish a new government on this earth. A different type of government. A government where God's law is kept. Do we appreciate that knowledge? I'm sure that we do. But we really want to incorporate that into our entire attitude, that we really know this. What is the gospel? We're talking about the coming kingdom, right? What is gospel? Christ told us in Matthew, he says, go and preach the gospel unto everyone. What is the gospel? It's the good news. It's really good news. Good news about what? About this coming kingdom, about this coming government that these upcoming holy days represent. We have really good news. There's not a lot of good news in this world, but we have good news. We know it. We have opportunity to know it. We should be thankful for that. We should be happy about that. That's what David is saying here. We can be happy because of the peace that comes from that. So when we enter into these conversations with our coworkers, should we be shy about that message? I'm shy about that message. I'll admit that. I don't always bring it up. I don't know why. Maybe it comes from high school, junior high, whatever. Being a little different, being a little weird, taking the Sabbath off, not playing sports, not eating pork pizza. I don't know what it is, but I admit I tend to be a little shy about the message. But it's a great message. We shouldn't be shy about it. Many are here in this room because somebody they worked with was not shy about the message. So we can think about that. If we're thankful for this message, if we're thankful for what we have, it might make sense that we would want to share it. Somebody else may be thankful and have an appreciation for it. Someone else may be searching for that same truth that we've had an opportunity to encounter in some way. The next day we come upon is the Day of Atonement. And that day gives us a hope, something we can be thankful for, because we know what? That adversary is going to be put away on that day. And his destructive influence will be removed for a period of time from this earth. We can be thankful for that. Maybe we forget to be thankful sometimes because our lives are just too good. Maybe we do have it really good. I mean, we are 5% of the population. We're a subset of that 5% of the population. America, most of the world would say and agree that we have it really good in America. Even those who are worst off among us have it really good compared to much of the world. Half the world lives on less than a dollar a day, so they live in dramatically different conditions and in dramatically different environment. Maybe we forget to think about how good we have it. And for that reason, because life is pretty good for us, maybe we don't think enough about the fact that so many others don't have it so well and are suffering and really could use a new government and Satan's influence being put away. When you think about what occurs, like just take human trafficking for example, and what their existence must be like. Be horrible. Just thinking of that situation alone makes us want to pray for these days to come soon and come fast and to be thankful for them and want to share that news that it's going to happen. So we look forward to that. We can be thankful knowing that there's going to be a 1,000-year period of rest from Satan's influence, a time of peace, a time when people will have opportunity to know God's truth and his plan and have a relationship with God. That's what we'll be studying at the feast. And that's what we should be preparing for too. We want to think about the fact that the feast is not just a time to go have some fun, to eat at some nice places. It's also a time to go and receive an education and to really think about what that time means. Because it is, after all, our number one goal in life, is it not? Seek first the kingdom. That's what we're looking forward to. So we want to go prepared with that mindset that this is going to be a really good time for us to refresh ourselves on our purpose, on God's plan, and praying that it comes soon for everyone's sake. You can also think about your role in that kingdom. That helps make it really real when you think about the part that you can play in that kingdom. So on the ride here, we went around the car and talked about that a little bit and said, what would you like to do? The question was, what would you like to be doing in the kingdom? And Carrie says, I want to work with the babies. All of those babies. I want to be there and hold those babies and help nurture them and nurse them. And then we came here and we saw a little baby, the Knutson's baby. And how exciting will that be? That's meaningful. That changes everything. The level of appreciation you have for that time when all those babies that didn't have a chance to live their life will someday have that opportunity. And that's what she wants to do. When you think about the role that you could specifically play in the kingdom, it may make it that much more real to you and help you develop that attitude of gratitude about that plan. When we consider this knowledge, we can consider that this is extremely valuable knowledge. Let's turn over to Proverbs. Proverbs was written by Solomon, and Solomon had this God-given wisdom, and he thought things through. And as we read through Solomon, or through Proverbs 3, it says, happy is this man. And as you go through, you can read all of Proverbs 3. It says, don't forget my law. Trust in the Lord with your whole heart. Don't lean on your own understanding. I'm skimming through it. In all your ways, acknowledge God. He'll direct your path. Don't be wise in your own eyes. In other words, listen to these words. This is the wisest man trying to instruct young people on what's really important, what's really valuable. Honor the Lord with your possessions, with the first fruits of all your increase. The last couple sermons we've had were about tithing. And when you acknowledge that God is the one giving you those blessings, then it's easy to think about giving him the share that he asked for. Don't despise the chastening of the Lord. Sometimes we go through periods of time in our life where God's saying, I want you, but not exactly the way you are right now. I want you the after. There's the before and there's the after. Let's start working on the after picture a little bit and change a few things from the before picture. Those aren't easy times of life. Do we appreciate those times? To be honest, probably not during, but when it's all over, we can be thankful for that, and that's what it's saying here. Don't despise the chastening or detest his correction. For whom the Lord loves, he corrects, just as a father the son in whom he delights. God knows what the outcome is going to be, or he hopes what the outcome is going to be, and he's going to put the effort in on you so that the end product can be useful. And we can be thankful for that. And happy, verse 12, 13, is the man who finds wisdom. Happy is the man who finds this. And he who gains understanding, for the proceeds are better than profits of silver. This is saying silver and rubies and gold, and that's not usually the way we measure wealth now. But it's more profitable than money. More profitable than things that we value now. This knowledge. So important. We can think about it and we can be really grateful for this. Okay? So God's plan. And we can also be grateful for God's law. God's law. Well, that sounds restrictive. Why would we be grateful for that? It governs our lives. It governs our relationships. If we think about it, really, civil law is based on God's law. That's not really a very well-kept secret. That's true. Now, let's just say there's been some erosion on that over time and some manipulation of those laws. Some get forgotten, some get omitted. But basically, those things which are illegal are also illegal, for the most part, in God's law and vice versa. Blessed are we when we know these things. Reading through Psalm 119, it's a great read. That's a great thing to read on the Sabbath. And it talks about David's appreciation. David's talking about his appreciation and expressing that appreciation for God's law. Why? Why is he so thankful for rules? Seems a little counterintuitive, right? Rules aren't always fun. It's fun to be able to do whatever you want. But he's saying no. He sees the wonderful results of obeying God's laws. He understands the blessings. Psalm 119, verse 16. Skip back there and read a couple excerpts here. Psalm 119, verse 16. I will delight myself in your statutes. I will not forget your word. There are numerous examples throughout history of times when God's word was applied to something and then the result came out so much better. The plague, the black plague in Europe, was epidemic. They could not stop it. And someone said, a Jewish man said, we should be burying these bodies. And so they did. They buried or burned the bodies and they were able to stop that epidemic. Just one small example. One small example. Health issues. And when you go through, some will say that's the Old Testament and it's done away with. But read some of those principles and it makes sense. The dietary laws. Laws about mold. And being careful about mold. We are hearing a lot about mold. And Arizona is pretty dry, but it does have mold because moisture is held in the ground. And we have mold or water leaks into the walls. And it can create a mold situation which can have profound health implications. And it's hard to find. And then many times somebody's struggling with an issue and then they find out that their AC ducts are just full of mold or their walls have mold in them. And when they resolve that problem, their health issues improve. There are biblical health laws regarding mold. So just a couple of examples. God created us. He knows what we need. He knows what's in our best interest. It makes sense that if he's the creator, if he's the manufacturer of us as human beings, that he has the right to write the owner's manual. And it should make sense and it should work. And if you follow it, David's saying, if you follow it, things go great. They're optimal. Verse 18, David's acknowledging here that he doesn't understand it all, but he says to God, open my eyes that I may see wondrous things from your law. He acknowledges here that he's a stranger on earth. Do not hide your commandments from me. My soul breaks with longing for your judgments at all time. So David wants to know more. He loves what he's learned so far and what he's applied so far in his life, and he just continues to want more. That is an attitude of gratitude towards God's law. Great example here. He longs for his judgments and precepts. Question for you. What if all God's laws were kept? Now, pick one. One of those laws. Just pick your favorite one. What if just one law was kept? What if no one ever stole? You didn't have to worry about anybody stealing your things. Well, that little remote clicker thing would be out of business for cars. You don't have to lock your car. You don't have to lock your doors. You don't have to get security systems. Cameras would be far less prevalent. Imagine all of the resources deployed towards those things and the costs associated with cars would be cheaper. Houses would be cheaper to build. There'd be a lot less of a police force. But just imagine the implications of any one particular law. It would be massive. So we could walk through the entire Ten Commandments. To develop an appreciation of God's law, that's another great thing to do on the Sabbath. Sit down, get your little journal out, write down the Ten Commandments, and think about the implications of every one of those being kept. How we might, you could do two sides of the paper. You could do how we can keep the law now, and how the world will be different when everyone keeps that law. That would be a great way to study God's law and appreciate it. As you read through Psalm 119, David says that he meditates on God's law. That's a way to do that. Sometimes that sounds a little ethereal. Meditate on something, what does that mean? And do you have to, you know, have a yoga outfit to do that? That means think about it. So God's law. Now we'll move on to the next thing that we can be grateful for and the way we can exhibit this characteristic. We can be grateful for relationships. We can be thankful for relationships, for all the people that drive us crazy in life, right? Or maybe we're the person who drives other people crazy. Whatever it is, we can be thankful for all of those relationships. Why? Because that's really what God's all about, is relationships. Back to God's law. What's God's law all about? First four are about our relationship with Him. The next six are about our relationships with others. It's really all about relationships. So should we be thankful for these relationships? When we adopt this mindset of gratitude, it can dramatically change our relationships. This might be one of the most profound implications of this attitude, is in our dealings with other people. Because what do we tend to do as humans? Do we think about all the positive attributes of people or things? Or do we become sort of myopic on problems? If somebody has a big pimple on their chin, do you say, "You look great today"? And you think, "Wow, I hope that thing doesn't bust loose." It's weird, this problem that we have, where we just focus on problems, right? We focus on whatever isn't perfect rather than all the great things about the person. So that's a metaphorical for how we treat people and how we think about them. So what about this? What if rather than think about all the ways someone drives us crazy, the ways we don't agree with them, the areas of friction we have in our lives, what if we think, this is why I appreciate this person? At least at a bare minimum, they're not mean, or they're not this. And maybe you start there, and then you work your way up to being thankful for the things that they've done. And when you take some time and think about the areas that you appreciate someone, it's going to change your interactions with them. It has to. It changes your mindset. So that's one area we can really be thankful for. And let's consider something else. Let's turn over to John. John 3. Let's start in verse 12. We'll get to the famous scripture, but let's start a little earlier. So this is Jesus speaking. It's in red letters here. And he says, "If I've told you earthly things and you don't believe, how will you believe if I tell you heavenly things?" He's saying, you're probably not understanding everything I'm saying here. But he says, "No one has gone up to heaven, but one has come down, and that is the Son of Man who's in heaven. And as Moses lifted up the serpent in the wilderness to stop a problem that was going on at the time, so must the Son of Man be lifted up onto that stake, that whosoever believes in him should not perish, but have eternal life." So who did Christ die for? Whosoever believes in him. Who has the potential of believing in Christ? Everyone who comes into knowledge of the truth. Who is going to come into the knowledge of the truth at some point? Everyone who has ever breathed, and even those who haven't yet. Should that change our attitude about other people? Christ died for us. He died for them, too. For everyone. That does change our attitude. It should change our attitude about them. For God did not send his Son into the world to condemn the world, but that the world through him might be saved. So, Christ came and died for all of us. For only those, question for all of us, for only those who deserve it. Let's turn over to Romans 5. This is something we should remind ourselves of. We've wondered from time to time, why did God call this person? Or this person is so nice and so amazing, and they never knew God's truth, and this person drives us absolutely crazy, and we see them every week at church. Or they were part of the church, or they're our family members in the church, and Well, how in the world does that reconcile? Well, let's just carry that one thought further. We're also here. No relationship will ever be perfect because you're in it. I'm in it. That's what somebody told me about my marriage. I've probably shared that with you before. Your marriage will never be perfect because you're in it. I have no further questions for you. So Romans 5. So we can skim through this again. Therefore, having been justified by faith, we have peace with God through Jesus Christ, and we just read about that, through whom we have access by faith into this grace, this undeserved pardon in which we stand and rejoice in the hope of the glory of God. We've talked about that. We know what our hope is. It's in this glory of God when He returns. And not only that, something else we've already talked about, we glory in tribulations. We glory when we have tribulations, yes, because we know that those tribulations produce perseverance. And perseverance produces character, and character hope. See, this is a big picture. This is the attitude of gratitude right here being exhibited and described. Because we appreciate these things because we're seeing the big picture that God has granted us wisdom to see. Hope doesn't disappoint because the love of God has been poured out in our hearts by the Holy Spirit who was given to us. Because we deserve it? No. Verse 6. For when we were still without strength, for in due time Christ died for the ungodly. For scarcely a righteous man will one die, yet perhaps for a good man, someone would even dare to die. But God demonstrates His own love toward us in that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. So Christ died for us, and we're sinners. We blow it. We're not driving people. People aren't driving us crazy. We're driving them crazy, and they're just mirroring it back to us. We experience the friction. It's probably because of us. Let's think about it. Let's insert our name. Our name has a problem with this name. Our name has a problem with that name. Our name has a problem with this one and this one and this one. What's the common denominator? Our name. Eliminate that half of the equation and all of these other problems go away. Today's a math day, right, Mr. Remy? So we're doing math. We eliminate half the equation and all the other problems go away. So we can think about that. And then we can be thankful. Really express gratitude. And maybe, just maybe, when we change us, it can change the relationship. We can see God's law at work there. Now, this takes character. It implies making a choice. Gratitude is an attitude, and that means we choose the attitude. We get to choose. Do we choose our attitudes? Are they the results of choices we make? They are. So we can think about this attitude. And when we choose the right attitude, back to what we just read, when we're persevering about that, then it builds what? Character. Character that comes as a result of making good choices. Becomes a part of the fabric of who we are. We start to practice this, and then practice makes us better and better at it, and we grow and get stronger at it, and we build that character. And it changes who we are, and it changes our thought process. Let me see if I can remember this right. I just recently read this, that our problems don't come as a result of the people or circumstances in our lives. Our problems come as a result to our reactions to the people and circumstances in our lives. That's worth really thinking about, isn't it? It's all about our reactions. Other people may not have a problem with that. Why? Because they react differently. So that goes back to the common denominator with all of our problems is us. We're a part of all of our problems. So we can be thankful that God shares with us the owner's manual and gives us a way to understand ourselves and understand these relationships with others. And He gives us rules to help define the optimal scenario for them. In fact, in I didn't write this one down, but it says, as much as depends on you, live at peace with everyone else. Implying that there is an element there. You're the common denominator, but there is another variable there too. So that's true. But we can work on that. Lack of appreciation kills relationships. No matter what somebody does for you, no matter how good they are, how pure their heart is, if you never appreciate it, it's going to diminish that relationship. And we all know that vice versa is true too. When we work hard, even if we don't do all that great of a job, but we think we do, and somebody else doesn't appreciate it, it hurts that relationship. So expressing appreciation can make such a difference. Let's turn over to Philippians 4. Philippians 4, verse 4 through 9. Rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I'll say rejoice, Paul writes. Rejoice, be excited, be glad, be thankful. Have the right attitude. Be thankful. Have that gratitude. Let your gentleness be known to all men. Gentleness implies friction-free. Be anxious for nothing. Settle down and relax. Let those anxieties disappear in everything by prayer and supplication. So you're going before God with thanksgiving. This is the attitude that you come to Him, the attitude of gratitude. Let your requests be made known to God. And the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding. We already talked about that a little bit earlier. This peace surpasses all understandings, will guard your hearts and minds through Jesus Christ. And then, whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of good report, if there is any virtue, if there is anything praiseworthy, as we think about relationships, it's saying here, Paul said, if there is anything praiseworthy, think on these things. Meditate. Think deeply on these things. That's how we should approach our relationships with others. We should go before God with them when we have problems. We should be thinking of anything that's praiseworthy. We should have the proper attitude. It will change our lives. We can be grateful for physical blessings. What do we desire in life? What do we need? Maslow studied this. I printed out this little chart. Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Physiological, breathing, food, water, sleep. Next is safety. Once you have your physical needs met, and if there's been the saying expressed that any society is 9 meals from anarchy. You think about that. We go one day and we're hungry, weak, grumpy, hangry is the new word. We're hangry, right? And that's one day or a couple hours. 2 or 3 days later, society's breaking down. It doesn't matter if there are locks on those doors. They're going through them. Some people need to eat after 3 days. Because it's getting close. So, physiological needs must be met. And there can be a structure around that, but that's top priority. After that, then security. We desire security. We desire some sort of longevity with regard to those physiological needs. So we save some money. Or back in biblical days, having lots of animals was a buffer against that. If you had animals, then you might have milk and you'd have protein and you'd have leather. That was a store of wealth. So we store a little wealth, health, property, safety. Beyond that, we long for love and belonging. Beyond that, esteem, self-esteem, confidence, achievement, respect of others, respect by others. And then finally, self-actualization, morality, creativity, problem-solving, lack of prejudice, acceptance of facts. We start to really grow as a person. Does God want these things for us? Does he provide them for us? Let's turn over to Matthew 6. It turns out he does. Matthew 6:25. Therefore, I say to you, this is Christ in his sermon here. I say to you, don't worry about life, what you'll eat and what you'll drink, or about your body, what you'll put on. Life's a lot more than food and clothing. This shouldn't be your primary consideration. Look at the birds. They don't sow or reap, yet God takes care of them. And he's going to take care of us. And even if half the world's living on less than a dollar a day, they're here. They exist. They're living. God's taking care of them. We think we need all this stuff. It's fun to go camping. It's fun to go camping, and you realize you don't need all this stuff. You don't have any of it there, or hardly any of it. And yeah, what do you lack? It turns out to be pretty fun, and then you're driving home back to all of your stuff, and you're thinking, what did I miss? We've asked the question before. What did you miss? I don't know. It was pretty fun. I'd rather go back, honestly. So we think we need all this stuff. Christ is saying, don't worry about it all. Consider all that. Don't worry, what shall we eat, what shall we wear? Not saying don't work, by the way. Not saying don't pay attention, don't be diligent. But seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness. All those other things will be added to you. So don't worry about tomorrow. Tomorrow will worry about its own things. Sufficient for today is its own trouble. We can be grateful for what we do have. And when we start to be grateful for what we do have, then it starts to minimize those things that we don't, or those things we think we have to have. And it really does change things and put it in perspective. Gratitude can definitely change our attitude. We have these biases. Some people have more of a positive bias, and some people have more of a negative bias. That's depicted many times by one of these. We'll get it to half. It's not quite half, but you get the point. Is it half empty, half full? It's pretty good. Now it's closer. Half full, half empty, that depends on your bias, right? On your perspective. Positive, negative. Is it hot in here? Or is it nice and warm? It can also be defined as scarcity versus abundancy bias. Have you been familiarized with that? Does that ring a bell? Let's define scarcity. This is from Stephen Covey. People with a scarcity mentality tend to see everything in terms of win-lose. There's only so much, and if someone else has it, that means there will be less for me. The more principle-centered we become, the more we develop an abundance mentality. The more we are generally happy for the successes, well-being, achievements, recognition, and good fortune of other people. It's getting close to defining love, is it not? We believe their success adds to rather than detracts from our lives. So why do we have this scarcity bias? I don't know. Satan influences this world, and he does influence the way we think. And so to contrast scarcity versus abundancy thinking. Scarcity, there will never be enough. Abundance, there will always be more. With regard to manna, in the Old Testament, the stories recorded of manna, and every day they had to go out and gather what they needed for that day, right? He who gathered little had no lack. He who gathered not much had none left over. You couldn't keep manna for more than a day, except for one day a week. So you had to depend on God at that point. You had to be grateful for what you had. Or you should be. But he provided on a daily basis. 2 million plus people walked right out in the middle of a desert, and God took care of them for 40 years. He can take care of us. There will always be more. Scarcity competes to stay on top. Abundance collaborates to stay on top. Scarcity hoards things from others. Oh, I have to have my store of wealth. Abundance is generous with others. Scarcity won't share knowledge. Knowledge is power. Abundance shares knowledge. Let's grow. Let's develop synergy. Let's create synergies. Let's think about things together. Let's share ideas, not hoard and protect knowledge. Scarcity won't offer to help others. Abundance freely helps others. Scarcity is suspicious of others. Abundance trusts and builds rapport. One resents competition, the other welcomes competition. Everyone gets better when you have to up your game. Afraid of being replaced is the scarcity mindset. Strives to grow is the abundance mindset. Strives to be valuable. I don't have to protect my job. I just have to be valuable. I'll never get cut from this team if I solve problems or provide solutions or am somehow valuable to someone else every day. I'll always have a job. That's the abundant mindset. Scarcity thinks times are tough. Abundance says the best is yet to come. Scarcity thinks the pie is shrinking. And this, by the way, goes across every time period, circumstance, all through time. Abundance thinks the pie is growing. Scarcity thinks small and avoids risk. Abundance thinks big and embraces the challenge. Scarcity fears change. Abundance takes ownership of change. Let's do it the right way. Scarcity has this inward focus and abundance an outward focus. So, as we think about this, we can think, what does God want us to think like? What thought process does he value? And what does he test us on? Matthew 25 gives us an answer to that. In Matthew 25, there are multiple different stories here. The 10 virgins, be prepared, have lots of oil, bring plenty. The talents, make the most of your talents. Grow whatever God has given you, grow it. If he gives you 5, if he gives you 2, double it. What if you have that scarcity mentality and think, I hope somebody doesn't take this from me? What does God say? Is that useful? It's not useful. You didn't do anything with it. You tried to protect it, to bury it. It doesn't work. We can go down to chapter 26. We review these. Oh, by the way, in chapter 25, he also says, the kingdom of heaven calls his servants to them. And when he returns, he's going to call all these servants back. In verse 31, the story starts. Son of Man will come back, call all of them, and he's going to separate those. Those who did things for others, who shared drink, food, clothes, housing, time. Time is a resource we can share. And then those who didn't. We reviewed those stories a few times. Here's one that we can review that doesn't get reviewed very often. Let's just go to the very next chapter. Chapter 26 of Matthew. Then the chief priests, the scribes, and the elders of the people assembled at the place, at the palace of the high priest, and plotted to take Jesus by trickery and kill him. Why? Why did the high priest want to kill Jesus? In any good mystery movie, you want to discern the motive. So what is their motive? Perhaps a scarcity mindset. Jesus threatened the leadership. He threatened the established regime because they were of a certain family lineage. And they had power in this scenario. And this power is now threatened. And now Jesus is coming and saying, we're going to open this up to everyone. And they say, hold on. This is blasphemous because we're of a certain lineage. We don't want that to happen. We need to kill this guy. We need to shut this message down. They were expecting something completely different when Jesus came, that they would establish his kingdom and they would have great positions in this kingdom. And now they're being threatened. They don't like this message. So they have motive. What's their mindset? Are they thankful? Do they have gratitude for this guy and the message? And do they want to share what they have? No. It's the opposite of that. Who's the adversary? So what kind of mindset is that? No, they want to shut it down. So that's their motive. So now Jesus is in Bethany at the house of Simon the leper, which they didn't approve of that either. And a woman came to him having an alabaster flask of very costly fragrant oil. And she poured it on Jesus' head and as he sat at the table. And when the disciples saw this, they were indignant, saying, "Why this waste? For this fragrant oil might have been sold for much and given to the poor." But then Jesus was aware of it. When he heard what they were talking about, he says, "Hold on. Why do you trouble this woman? She has done a good work. For the poor you'll always have. That's not necessarily going to get fixed. But me, you don't have always. And in pouring this fragrant oil on my body, she did it for my burial. Assuredly, I say to you, wherever this gospel shall be preached in the whole world, what this woman has done will be told as a memorial to her." She was generous with their resources. She thought it was appropriate to give honor in this case. And Jesus applauded that mindset. There are other stories as well where generosity is shown as being respected. How about the widow and her two mites? She didn't have much, but she was generous with what she had. And Christ said, she didn't have much, but she gave a big percentage of it. She gave more than everyone else. Even if nominally the value was lower, that meant more because it was from a heart of generosity. Not giving, clanking, making a big show of putting money in the pot and thinking, what do I get out of this? She just gave willingly. We could read in 1 Chronicles 16:8. I'll just share with you the context here, and then perhaps you can read it some other time. Chronicles records the stories of the kings. And in 1 Chronicles 16, you have David, again, expressing his joy about having moved the ark. And it's entitled David's Commemorative Psalm. And he says, "Oh," the first part of it in verse 8, "Oh, give thanks to the Lord. Call upon his name. Make his deeds known among the people. Sing to him. Sing psalms to him. Sing of all his wondrous works. Let the hearts of those rejoice." It's a song. We sing it, right? "Let the hearts of those rejoice who seek the Lord." And he goes on. It's an inspiring song. We can read that and think about how we could apply that in our lives. Let's consider this question. Do we always get what we want? What if we did? We get everything we want today. What happens tomorrow? We start a new list. That's what we do. We never stop wanting. We think we want to stop wanting. That's what we want, is to stop wanting. If only I had this, then I would stop wanting that. And probably true. And then you'd start wanting the next thing. You get a new car. Guys, I'll generalize. I hate stereotype too much, but I know that, well, let's just say when I was a young man, and I know some other young men who think similarly. Oh, I got a new car, new truck. Oh, that's cool. I like that truck. Oh, now I need tinted windows and wheels and a stereo and dot, dot, dot. Now you want something else, right? Ladies, you get a new house. Now you want ceiling fans. Well, okay. You probably want a yard, too, and then you want drapes. Those are important to you. Whatever it is you want, there's something else you want, I'm sure of it. Furniture. Have to paint this wall and paint that wall. And then there's a long list of things. At least in my experience, the list. And I add to that list too. So whatever it is, not stereotype, but there are these things you want. Now you have one thing, you want the next thing. It's been defined as the hedonic treadmill. I'll read this to you. Hedonic treadmill. The tendency of a person to remain at a relatively stable level of happiness despite a change in fortune or the achievement of major goals. According to the hedonic treadmill, as a person makes more money, or achieves more, or accomplishes more, or acquires more, expectations and desires rise in tandem, which results in no permanent gain in happiness. So your happiness level is relatively stable, but you're on this treadmill, acquiring, achieving, and yet you never really go anywhere. It's a treadmill. The opposite of this is true, by the way, this principle. They record the emotional levels of those who have a tragedy occur in their life. Say you lose a leg in a tragic car accident. Well, there's a short period of time where you are less happy. And that disability causes a new set of issues in your life. But they find that most people are restored to their previous level of happiness or very close to it. You see people that lose their legs, and then the next thing you know, they're in wheelchair races or playing wheelchair basketball. Or, you know, Dennis Montgomery, one of the happiest guys I've ever met. Most positive attitude you could ever imagine. And he had some unfortunate circumstances, has unfortunate circumstances in his life, but very few more inspiring people than Dennis Montgomery. His happiness level is very high, and he shares that. He has an abundance mentality. He really does. Some wanting is inspirational, and the Bible does say that desire causes us to be motivated and to work hard, and we should do that. But we should also be thankful. And when we have that quality of being thankful and that readiness to show appreciation for it and to return kindness, we acknowledge that the benefit that we receive comes from God, or we acknowledge that it comes from the efforts from others. There are tangible benefits. This attitude of gratitude can improve your health, reduce stress, make us happier, and improve relationships. In conclusion, let's turn over to Colossians 3. And we'll read something God inspired for us regarding this mindset. Colossians 3 and verse 12. Therefore, as the elect of God, holy and beloved, set apart in love, this is to you. Put on tender mercies, kindness, humility, meekness, long-suffering. These are all character traits, and these are all very much relationship-oriented. Bear with one another, forgiving one another. If anyone has a complaint against another, even as Christ forgave you, so you also must do. But above all these things, put on love, which is the bond of perfection. And let the peace of God rule in your hearts, to which you are also called in one body, and be thankful. Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly in all wisdom, teaching and admonishing one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing with grace in your hearts to the Lord. And whatever you do, wherever and whenever you do it, do all in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ, giving thanks to God the Father through Him. And in this way, we epitomize the attitude of gratitude. Thank you.